Welcome to the Master Your Health podcast. My name's Amanda Rocchio, previously Amanda Meixner. I am best known for my meal prep and nutrition content. And today I'm here with my co-host, the research junkie between the two of us, and my husband, Chris Rocchio.
Hello, everyone.
We're recording this podcast from a beautiful, sunny Los Angeles, bringing you some powerful tips when it comes to setting up a proper night routine and improving your sleep. But before we get into today's episode, Chris is going to read a review from one of our listeners.
Yeah, this one is from Trainer Caroline. I've been following Amanda and Chris for almost a year now. It's been amazing to see their transformation. Now I can listen to them on the way to work. Getting a new episode has always been something I look forward to. Everyone they have comes in with fantastic and easy to follow advice. I'd recommend this podcast to anyone looking to make a change to their health. Thank you, Caroline.
Thank you so much, Caroline, for that review. If you guys could take a moment to leave us a review, it means so much to Chris and I. It's what keeps us going. It's what motivates us. And it really helps us, you know, think of new ideas for each episode. If you have any requests, you can leave them also within the review.
All right, today we're going to be talking about sleep. And this is everything from setting up your bedroom and your nighttime routine for sleep success, and also some physiological benefits of good sleep and some physiological detriments of poor sleep. So that'll be the rundown, and we'll try to give you the full comprehensive breakdown.
Was sleep always a priority in your life, Chris?
Absolutely not. I mean, you probably heard me say it before on this podcast, but I actually used to loathe sleep. I used to think it was overrated. I used to think that, you know, it was a waste of time. They'd be like, oh, we waste one third of our lives sleeping. And I just tried my hardest to avoid getting in bed every night.
Well, I remember because when we first started dating, I would call you No Sleep Ninja because I would go to sleep early, or like fairly early. But then we'd wake up super early for hot yoga or a workout routine, and you would go to sleep later than me. So you would go to sleep much later than me, like hours later, but you'd wake up at the same time. And I was like, how do you do it? You're literally a no sleep ninja.
Yeah. And that was right when I moved back to Los Angeles for the second time. And, I stayed in a house, which was what we call the band house, which had, you know, a few musicians living in it. And, these guys would party and play music till like 4 a.m. And I would still get up 2 hours later to get to meet you at yoga in the morning.
That's crazy. I mean, I appreciate you for sticking to our hot yoga when we first started dating, but I'm glad now you make sleep more a priority. I'm actually wondering, where was the shift for you? Because I think it was around the time that you actually read the book Sleep Smarter, right?
Yeah, it was both listening to the podcasts from Sean Stevenson's podcast and also reading his book, correct?
Okay.
That was the transition.
I've been pretty crazy about my sleep for a while now, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, was I crazy right away when we first started?
Yeah, it's so funny that when we were first dating, it was one of the first times we spent the night together, and we're getting ready for bed, and she's already in bed. We had finished watching something, and she's sleeping, and I stay up rather late, and so I'm still wide awake, and she's already, you know, kind of falling asleep or whatever. So I go into the kitchen and make myself a protein shake and bring it into the room, and I start shaking it before I start drinking. And again, this is like right, you know, I mean, we've been hanging out, working together for a couple months, but this is like right when we transitioned into the dating mode, went from friends to dating.
Yeah.
And she's like, she props her head up and was like, are you going to drink that? Or no, what'd she say?
She said, I was definitely annoyed.
Are you going to drink that? And you can just hear there was just no patience and no tolerance for that type of behavior post, you know, sleep time.
Yes. I mean, I don't think crazy is the right word, because I think after listening to this podcast today, I think you'll see why it's important to prioritize your sleep and why you should take it seriously. Now, you don't have to be anal all the time. You know what I mean? Every now and then, or if you want to go have some fun with some friends, I don't want you to, you know, it to be so negative that you're obsessing. Like, try not to obsess too much, but definitely.
This comes from somebody who actually does obsess.
I probably obsess a little too much, but we do want you to make it a priority. And if you're more like Chris and you weren't making the sleep a priority, hopefully after today, you'll reconsider that.
Yeah, and you didn't know all the science at that time. You were just going off of how you feel and your energy levels, right?
Yes.
So you were just kind of listening to your body and realizing, if I don't get to bed by 10, maybe 10:30 at the latest, then you're going to just be hating life.
Yes, it was definitely more about how I felt, like mentally, physically. And I worked out a lot, so I feel like I needed that sleep, especially because of that. But, I mean, as you'll hear today, everyone really does need sleep. And before we dive into some tips for improving your sleep and sleep quality, we wanted to talk through why sleep is so important and some of the negative effects of getting too little sleep.
All right, so sleeping is an important function for many reasons. When you sleep, your brain sends signals to the rest of your body to release hormones and compounds that'll help. And this decreases risk for adverse health conditions, manages your hunger levels, maintains your immune system, retains memory, all this kind of stuff.
So what exactly is going on when you're sleeping? So I'm going to get into a little bit of detail here. I won't take too long with it, but basically there are four distinct phases of sleep you go through multiple times throughout the night. Stage one is the earliest stage of sleep. Your eyes are closed, but it's easy to wake you up. If you wake up after this stage, you'll probably feel like you haven't really slept at all. So you know what I mean? You like nod off in class or at work, and you wake up and you don't feel refreshed or anything. That's probably about stage one of sleep. So stage two is somewhat light sleep. So it's not exactly deep, but it's not the earliest stage. So your heart rate begins to slow and your body temperature begins to drop, but you're not quite in deep sleep yet. Stage three is actually deep sleep, which is a very restorative stage of sleep. During this restorative stage, blood pressure drops, breathing slows down, blood flow moves to the muscles and tissues to repair them, and the immune system is strengthened. So again, one of the more restorative phases of the sleep cycles. And then finally, you'll get to stage four, which is REM sleep. So REM actually stands for rapid eye movement, because during this stage, your eyes are darting around back and forth, and your breathing and heart rate become more varied. Now, this is often thought to be the stage most important for memory and learning, but new research does suggest that all the cycles of sleep may play an important varied role in memory processing and learning in different ways. So yeah, we kind of like to single out each stage of sleep to kind of say what's more important, but all of them are important. And it typically takes about 90 minutes to go through one full sleep cycle that includes all four stages. So that's why you'll actually hear experts say, oh, if you're sleep deprived, a 90-minute nap can help, because you'll go through all four stages of the sleep cycles. But again, that doesn't necessarily make up for not getting sleep every night, but it is nice to know that a full 90-minute nap, you'd go through all four stages of the sleep cycle.
Yeah, and the 90-minute sleep cycle is definitely applicable, because we always talk about getting 8 hours of sleep, right? But if you're getting exactly eight, you're actually cutting yourself off right in the middle of one of your sleep cycles.
Right.
So, I mean, it's actually more ideal if you're either getting 7.5 or 9. But that actually feeds into the idea that there's a Goldilocks or a sweet spot zone in terms of the duration of your sleep, because there are studies that show that poor sleep in terms of sleep deprivation, so anything, you know, at six or less, can cause problems in the future. And then also, which you may be surprised, but even too much sleep can cause some of these problems as well. So there is such a thing as too much sleep. And I also, we can get into the studies into that, and we'll put that in the show notes. But I also wonder if there's a mental health issue with that, because obviously one of the symptoms is of depression is sleeping too much. So I wonder if there's an association with that, like if they have an association study that says, oh, well, if, you know, because a lot of these epidemiological studies are done by surveys, right? And they try to associate these things based on the responses of the surveys over time. So what if they say that, oh, well, I sleep 9-10 hours a day, and then they tie these to health, adverse health effects, right? Well, I wonder what the correlation is with depression, mm-hmm. and if that's the reason why they're sleeping so much, and then that kind of plays into more of the unhealthy lifestyle.
Yeah, my other question too is if they need more, like if they're in bed for 9-10 hours, but they're not actually going through these sleep cycles, so maybe they're just unhealthy and they're not able to go through these sleep cycles in a healthy way and get into deep sleep and REM sleep, so you're not really getting the benefit. So not only are you know, you're not really getting the quality sleep. So that would be also something I would begin to question. If you need to be in bed for 10 hours, are you getting into those different cycles of the sleep?
Yeah. A lot of people like to sleep off their hangovers. I know I used to do when I partied a lot. And you think that, you know, it's like, oh, shit, I slept for 10 hours. I should be restored. But just so you know that if you're sleeping after an alcohol bender, that quality of sleep, it could be 10 hours long and you could have been passed out the entire time, but your sleep quality is very poor no matter what.
Right.
And so, you know, there's a lot of aspects with that. Who knows what the small variables are and with that prolonged sleep. I just thought
that
was really
so
interesting
funny.
To share.
Well, that I still think sleeping off a hangover is still a good strategy.
Absolutely. I mean, you feel better, but that doesn't mean, you know, the 10 hours of sleep doesn't mean that it's 10
totally.
Hours of quality sleep.
Totally. Which is a good thing to note. Time in bed doesn't mean you're getting good quality sleep.
Yeah, and just to clarify, when we talk about quality of sleep, a lot of that has to do with whether or not you're getting into deep or REM sleep. And that's when you get a lot of the restoration and the growth and the rebuilding and the repairing that you did, let's say, from workouts or something like that. So that's when you're going to have a lot of that repairing going on. And if you don't get into that, you're going to have some shortfalls. Another thing to point out is that you cannot catch up or make up loss of sleep. So let's just say you had 4 hours of sleep the night before. You're not going to be able to sleep 12 hours the next night and then average out your 16 hours over the course of the 2 days. It does not work like that. And we'll get into some of the effects of just what one night of sleep deprivation can do, and you'd be very surprised.
Well, that doesn't mean that, you know, naps can't help in certain ways. It just can't make up for it consistently. You know what I mean? There are some benefits to taking naps or adding in some extra sleep, but on a regular basis, you can't just be like 6 hours, 12 hours. You know what I mean? I think that's really what we're trying to get at. And mm-hmm. So before we get into some tips for optimizing your sleep, we're going to walk through some of the negative effects we found in a handful of different studies. So I'm going to start with a 2010 meta-analysis that found that getting too little sleep was associated with an increased risk of early death. The study concluded that people reporting consistently sleeping 5 hours or less per night should be regarded as a higher risk group for all-cause mortality. There was about a 12% increased risk of death in short sleepers. So we're not 100% sure if that's an indication that you have some health problems that are causing you to get less sleep. But in general, it's saying that if that is happening to you, this is indeed an issue and this needs to be addressed. And it shouldn't be a regular occurrence that you're only getting 5 hours of sleep or less every single night.
Yeah, another study I thought was interesting was showed two things. One was that one night of sleep deprivation can reduce your insulin sensitivity by 33%. Okay, so that's basically insulin sensitivity has an idea with your ability to deal with glucose in the body. And then so if you develop insulin resistance, then your body's got to create more insulin to manage blood sugar, and that can eventually lead to type 2 diabetes. And so what they did was they fed dogs a high-fat diet for 6 months straight and compared the effects on the insulin sensitivity to the effects of just one night of sleep deprivation.
One night.
And so just one night brought about 33% reduction in insulin sensitivity as opposed to 21% reduction that was caused by the 6 month of high fat diet. And just one night does that. And there's other studies that show just one night of sleep deprivation can cause you to be as insulin resistant as a type 2 diabetic for a day.
Wow.
Which is just scary. And plus there's another relationship between type 2 diabetes and sleep, because they say that, you know, let's just say being obese and having excess fat, right, can cause you to have certain things like sleep apnea. Which I think is interesting, because there's kind of a cyclical effect here, right? Because you can have, let's just say, poor sleep can eventually lead to insulin resistance and contribute to type 2 diabetes, but also type 2 diabetes and the excessive weight gain that is sometimes or often associated with that can cause things like sleep apnea or poor sleep, which in turn, you know,
makes
feeds into the vicious cycle of
it's
poor.
It's like, is it the chicken or the egg? Exactly. Or the egg or the chicken first?
Yeah, and I think once you get that ball rolling, it doesn't matter. It's just, you're in a vicious cycle.
Yeah. No, now you see why I'm so crazy about my sleep, because one night, all it takes is one night and you're more insulin resistant. So
yeah. Yeah. I mean, it just demonstrates that the importance of adequate sleep in maintaining blood sugar levels and reducing risk for metabolic diseases, things like obesity and diabetes.
Absolutely.
And another negative effect is on your appetite. So you have poor sleep, you know, your energy levels are down and you're constantly looking for quick sources of energy, right? Most of the time you're going for sugar. And you notice this too, like even if you didn't have, let's say you had a great night's sleep the night before, right? And then it's getting around 10, 11 o'clock, you're getting past your bedtime. Let's say you're working late, you're up late for some reason, and you get these cravings that you don't normally get. And it's most often you're going for sugar. And it's because your brain's looking for a quick source of energy. Well, that happens when the poor night's sleep as well. So, you know, your brain will release chemicals to signal hunger, and this leads to eating more, exercising less, and gaining weight.
Yeah, and to support everything you're saying there, Chris, I actually saw another 2018 study that linked sleep deprivation with increased late night junk food cravings and night snacking, and was strongly correlated with obesity, diabetes, and other health problems.
See, there you go.
with all this information we just gave you, you know, this is something you can now be more conscious about. If you get less sleep, you know, maybe instead of snacking on some sugary foods, you can do, or like sugary processed foods, you can go and get some fruit or some vegetables. So kind of bridge the gap there. If you're feeling a little more hungrier than usual and you're aware that it's most likely because you got less sleep that night, what are some healthy foods you can use to bridge that gap? Or, you know, maybe sip on some tea. So there are ways you can kind of get around this temporarily if you know, like every now and then life is full of craziness, you have deadlines, maybe they keep you up a little bit more. Something to be conscious about.
Yeah, and most of the time when I'm in that situation, I am mindful and aware of those things. I tend to go for a high protein diet because that's extremely satiating. And also raw sugary veggies, like let's just say some raw carrots, because it's still giving you some sugar, right? So you're getting that craving. You're giving your brain some sugar to feed off of, some quick energy. But also raw veggies are very filling as well. And so just, you know, chomp down on some of those baby carrots or whatever you need to do to satisfy your appetite, but also give yourself some sugar, keep that energy up, all that kind of stuff.
I love me some baby carrots and sliced bell peppers.
Yeah, me too. So next thing we're going to talk about is memory. And we've all heard this before in terms of the idea that, you know, you should never cram for a test and not sleep the day before because your memory retention is not going to be good. I didn't hear that stuff when I was a kid.
I still did that. Yeah. You still pass the test. You just don't retain the information as well.
Yeah. We didn't know that back in the day. See, I'm old. So a lot of this new information we didn't know. And when we did hear it, there was nothing backing it up. Like nobody was citing studies or anything like that. So there was
definitely drank a 5-hour energy and studied for my AP biology overnight. I got a 5 though. I still got a 5.
No, all the time. I mean, I crammed, but you can cram for memorization, for 24-hour memorization.
Right.
Doesn't mean that you're going to retain that information a week later, a month later, a year later.
Absolutely
so
not.
So that's the whole
I'm
thing.
Sure I mean,
how many people out there have taken a class and aced the class and couldn't tell you one thing that they actually studied in depth in the class? You know, so there's plenty of it. I know that I have plenty of examples. So that's what we're talking about, is that you may be able to memorize and regurgitate for a short period, but you're not retaining that memory. And on top of that, people who are sleep deprived have a harder time receiving information due to the brain's overworked or fatigued neurons. You may interpret events differently. You tend to have impaired judgment, and you lose the ability to access previous information. So, which is what we were just talking
about. May interpret events differently. This is why, you know, when you get less sleep, you might fight with your partner a little bit more than usual. You're grumpier.
Yeah. I feel like you're blaming me because I'm the one with the poor sleep.
Oh, no, I'm definitely blaming myself. I'm talking about me. I'm a little feistier when I get less sleep.
No comment.
So to support everything you said, I also saw another study that showed that chronic restriction of sleep to 6 hours or less per night over 14 consecutive days produced cognitive performance deficits equivalent to up to 2 nights of total sleep deprivation. So again, 6 hours, you know what I mean? It doesn't seem that bad. It's just slightly less than 7.5, but people getting 6 hours or less per night over 14 days straight really saw their cognitive performance decline, the same as like if you barely slept for 2 nights in a row. So the study really concluded that even relatively moderate sleep restriction can seriously impair waking neurobehavioral functions in healthy adults.
Yeah, and if you're doing this over a long period of time, you may not even notice the difference or the shortchanging of cognitive benefits that you're leaving on the table by getting, I wouldn't say poor sleep, but inadequate sleep. You know, so you may be getting 6 hours of sleep. And obviously there are some people who can't avoid this. If you just had a kid, if you work night shifts, sometimes you just can't get around it. But the thing is that when that's consecutive over a long period of time, you start getting used to that feeling and that becomes the norm. And
you mean don't, when you were a no sleep ninja?
Exactly. And so you don't even know how you would feel if you were optimizing and getting just that extra 2 hours of sleep. It's very interesting.
Absolutely.
And so another thing we want to talk about is the immune system. And obviously this is a very complex subject, so we'll try to be very, very quick. But one of the major things is the implications on inflammation. So when you sleep, your immune system releases compounds called cytokines, and they help fight inflammation. And these cytokines, along with white blood cells and antibodies, can be reduced over time with inadequate sleep. And a 2013 study found that sleep restrictions increase inflammatory compounds in the body, which are associated with conditions like asthma and allergies and things like that.
I mean, I'm not surprised at all, because I also feel like when I'm getting less sleep, that's usually the times when I've gotten sick, is when I was traveling. So, I mean, obviously the traveling, but then also we get to the place and we cannot get on a regular sleep cycle, and boom, I get sick and I'm like, I'm not getting enough sleep. That's definitely why.
Yeah. And that, again, that occurs in that REM and deep sleep stage. And so that's why it's really important to make sure that, and I mean, for instance, like we have Oura rings, right? And what these things do is that they have little nodes on the ring that track your pulse in the bottom of your finger. And it'll show you the next day you wake up and log into the app, and it shows you how much time you spent in, you know, your light sleep, REM sleep, deep sleep. And it really shows you your entire cycle. It's in a waveform, your entire night. And obviously it shows that, like, I wake up several times throughout the middle of the night. My deep sleep is poor. My REM sleep is kind of okay. But in that, something like that, if you're kind of suspecting that you're having problems, something like that, it can be very, very beneficial just to give you a snapshot every night of what maybe some patterns are. So we can get into some practices later, but you start realizing what you did the night before when you had poor sleep, and you track that, and then you look at, oh, what did I do the night where I had really good sleep? And so it kind of gives you an idea of what you can do, what practices you can include, or what things you need to completely wipe out of your schedule to optimize that.
Because nobody has time to get sick and have all these other issues we're talking about. And so you definitely want to make sleep a priority.
Of course.
And also getting into why sleep should be a priority for children too. I know obviously we're not talking about babies. They're not on a regular sleep schedule yet. I mean, obviously sleep is important for that. But when your children get older, getting them on a good sleep cycle, on a good sleep pattern is really important. A 2014 study actually showed that children who slept less had increased risk for obesity and high BMI, and this continued into adulthood. So again, it's not important just for adults. It's also very important for children, and getting them on a consistent sleep schedule. And I'm sure as a family, all of you will be much happier. Your kids are sleeping well, you're sleeping well. So really make it a priority for your whole family to get on a consistent sleep schedule.
Yeah, there's been many studies that show the benefits of going to bed and waking up at the same time every night. And obviously, you want that to be as close to linking up to the circadian rhythm as possible, right? You want to go to bed when the sun goes down, you know, relatively close to that, and wake up relatively close to when the sun is coming up, that kind of thing. So that's going to optimize that, as opposed to, oh, I'm just going to shoot for 7.5 hours no matter what time I go to bed.
Right.
Because there's so many different nuances in this. Like, for instance, your growth hormone, most of it is released before midnight. So if you get that 8 hours of sleep, say from midnight to 8, as opposed to from 10 to 6, there's going to be a huge amount of difference in terms of the hormones that are released and the amounts in which they're released comparing those two times. So it's really important that to at least try to get on a set schedule and to not just aim for that 7.5 to 9 hours.
So are you going to apply that policy to yourself, Chris?
I'm going to try to. I mean, I can't make any promises, but
Better overall. It's improved.
It's been improved 100 times over. It just, there's just always room for improvement.
Totally.
That's for sure. But another thing we're going to talk about is disease risk. So lack of sleep is known to be a contributing factor in many chronic health conditions. Those include, you know, diabetes, heart disease, obesity, and obstructive sleep apnea, which we talked about before. And obstructive sleep apnea, otherwise called OSA, is a disorder of sleep characterized by diminished or abrogated airflow. So it results in intermittent hypoxia and sleep fragmentation. So based on a large amount of evidence, this disorder seems to be associated with impaired glucose tolerance, or like we talked about before, impaired insulin sensitivity. And I think it's extremely interesting because you were talking about the increase of all-cause mortality.
Yeah, as you can tell, lack of sleep is connected with a host of negative issues. So you really want to set yourself up for success for getting better quality sleep. And we're going to be sharing some of our top tips in the next part of this podcast. With sleep, it all starts in the bedroom, right? So here are some things you can do to set your bedroom up for sleep success. So one of the most life-changing things for me was getting a blackout curtain. Because we live in Los Angeles, there's so many street lights. And now if I have the blackout curtain even opened just a little bit, I'm like, is it daylight out there? Because our room is almost pitch black when you put that up. And it really helps me fall asleep. There's one I got off Amazon, so I can link to that one in the show notes. But try to find one that works for your window. It can definitely be a life-changing investment. Mm-hmm. Another thing we have in our bedroom is a noise machine. Another thing I got off Amazon, we used to have a really loud fan. I actually bought this older janky fan because it was so loud that would help me sleep better because I couldn't hear people wrestling around or Chris wrestling around in the other room because he goes to sleep a little later than me. But now it's like once you get the noise machine, you can't really sleep without it. And I love the one we got because we can bring it with us when we're traveling, which really also helped us there because, again, Chris likes to wrestle around and I would get a little bit annoyed at him if it woke me up when we were traveling. And this really has helped. Has helped my sleep and helped our relationship.
If we're in a hotel room where there's nowhere else to go other than the bathroom, it's a game changer. It really is.
It is.
I'm keeping her up. She's just so pissed at me. And she's not outwardly pissed, but you can tell she's super frustrated.
Well, you know, it's hard to fall asleep. And
yeah,
clearly
no,
it's...
Totally. Absolutely.
it's solved a lot of problems for us, though.
And the good thing is, and what's funny is once you get used to the blackout curtain, like you were talking about before, when you do travel or you go somewhere else and they don't have a blackout curtain, like you notice that the difference.
Absolutely.
You know, it really messes with you.
It does. So that would be a time I would suggest getting an eye mask.
Get an eye mask, yeah.
Absolutely. We need to use ours a little bit more. We got a couple. Mm-hmm. The other thing I suggest, which, you know, depends on the person, but I would say, don't put a TV in your bedroom. Like, really, you should use your bedroom for two main purposes. I call sleep and sexy time. So really keeping the bedroom as those two things and not, you know, not sitting on the bed doing other things will really help you get into sleep mode when you walk in and lay down. And then lastly, the other thing I like to do at night is keep the room a bit cooler. So whether that's turn on the air conditioning at night, or you can open up, you know, if you have a window or a door in your bedroom, it's much better if you keep a cooler environment at night. You'll notice that you sleep better. You might even fall asleep faster.
Yeah, and to tie into what you were talking about before about not keeping your TV in your room is to just try to unplug from your screens in general, or at least get a blue light filter over your screen. So I have this thing called Flux. It's an app on my Mac. I'm pretty sure you can get it on PCs as well, but it pretty much goes by the sun cycle. So when the sun starts going down, it slowly starts putting a filter to start filtering out more and more blue light. It's not immediately. It doesn't immediately just turn your screen red. It just slowly fades more and more. But by like 9 p.m., there's no blue light, at least coming out of my computer, and it's just this huge red tint. It's a little bit annoying if you're trying to watch something, but it's definitely worth it if you're trying to prioritize your sleep. And then, you know, the iPhones and I'm sure the other phones have them in terms of these. It's a much weaker filter, but they have the filters on the phones. So I highly recommend using that. But better than both of those options is just try to unplug. Put your computer and your phone, your TV in another room and sit down, read a book. Just try to unplug from those electronic gadgets as much as possible.
Absolutely.
Another thing to talk about is caffeine. I know personally, when I used to work corporate, I used to always need an afternoon caffeine hit. You know, you go to lunch and you come back and you need that motivation for the rest of the day because you're like, oh God, I got 4 more hours of this shit. And then so I always used to go for the caffeine, but what you need to realize is that caffeine has a 5 or 6 hour half-life. And what that means is that it takes 5 or 6 hours just to get rid of half of the amount of caffeine that you drank. And so, but so say you have a mid-afternoon coffee, there's still some caffeine in your system by the time you go to bed, if you're going to bed at a reasonable hour. So one of those things is just maybe reduce and get decaf coffee, which has just a little bit of caffeine. You know, you can get your fix, but not too much, or maybe do something like a lighter caffeine, like some light green tea, something like that, instead of going for that full cup of coffee.
Well, even with green tea, I do try to cut it off at like 3 p.m. Right now, I'm breaking my rule right now as we record this podcast, but I do like to try to cut off green tea by like 2 or 3 p.m.
Or I do a weak steep. So for instance, if you normally steep it for like 2 minutes, you can steep it for like 45 seconds just to get a little light caffeine or something like that.
Absolutely.
I don't know.
Well, and Chris actually likes to get cappuccinos for dessert sometimes, and I had to remind him, yeah, to get decaf, because you make the assumption that they don't have decaf. I'm like, most places have decaf cappuccinos, babe. Don't mm-hmm. mess up your sleep. I always remind you.
Yeah, I love them. So another thing is, which ties into the filter, is just buying blue light blocker glasses, because you may have the filter over your screen, but it doesn't mean that the lights in your house aren't messing with you as you walk around. So with the exception of walking around with all of your lights off at night, then if you don't want to be bumping into stuff and bumping your knee and your shin, then a good pair of these glasses might be good. I mean, you might look like a little bit of a raver. I mean, Amanda is like walking around with these orange glasses all the time, but it's highly beneficial. When I do wear them, which is about half the time, then I do notice the difference. And so that's another option. And just to let you know the mechanism. So these screens, when they emit that blue light, that simulates the light emitted by the sun that wakes you up and gets your neurotransmitters awake and get you going for the day. And this happens at a time where you're supposed to be converting serotonin to melatonin at night, and this can block that. So that's a very crude breakdown, but for our purposes, it serves its purpose. And essentially, that's what you're trying to prevent. You're trying to prevent that blocking of that neurotransmitter conversion. Another good thing is exercise regularly. And there's actually some indications saying, you know, if you exercise earlier in the day, you can actually have a much better time getting to sleep as if you exercise like late in the day. There's been times where I've exercised, you know, just get a workout, go to the gym at like 8 p.m. And even though I'm exhausted from my day, there's just something about getting that high intensity late on the day. It's just really hard for me to wind down.
I know. I've always been like opposed to the night workouts for that reason. They do keep me up, especially mm-hmm. if it's too late. Now, if that's the only time you can get your workout in, we don't want you to skip your workouts. Yeah. So don't do that. But if you can get it earlier in the day or at lunch, that is definitely optimal for optimizing your sleep, especially if you're trying to get to bed a bit earlier.
Mm-hmm. I know that when I do an evening workout, I like to take a little bit of magnesium at night, like ideally magnesium 3-8, but I take about like, you know, 400 milligrams, 350 milligrams, something like that. But that kind of relaxes you. It's got a very calming effect, and it can kind of suppress that cortisol, so it can help you get to sleep. So I highly recommend that. And if you do need to take it, I don't like to depend on it, but if you do need to take it, take some melatonin. 3 milligrams is all you need. So that's a good little trick as well. Another thing that I was just turned on to that I haven't tried, but Amanda tried and she said she liked it, was mouth taping. So can you maybe talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, this is a new practice coming into play in the health industry. I'm seeing a lot of other health influencers do it. I'm reading about the benefits, and basically, when you tape your mouth, it helps to improve nasal breathing at night, which is really what you should be breathing through your nose when you're sleeping. And the thing I like about this specific mouth tape by Somnifix actually has a little bit of a breathing hole in the center of the tape. So you're not like, it's not like duct tape, like you got kidnapped. It's actually like there's a little bit of a breathing hole. So you can still technically breathe through your mouth, but it helps keep your mouth shut and encourage more nasal breathing. I haven't really used it enough to tell you like if consistently using it, how much benefit I got. But from everything my friends are saying, they said they improved their deep and REM sleep when they use this mouth tape. So I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Give it a try. Hey, if it works for you, use it. If you don't like it, don't use it.
I haven't tried it yet because I got something of a sinus problem right now. So I don't want to like tape my mouth shut and then wake up, not be able to breathe. And so no, I'm definitely going to try it.
So building on that, another thing that is super important to add to your day is to set up a calming night routine. Now you don't have to, you know, take as long as you might take with your morning routine. Just, you know, even one activity to kind of calm you down can really help at night. You know, you want to activate the parasympathetic nervous system and reduce cortisol at night. So this will help ensure you fall asleep faster and you get better sleep, especially if you had a stressful day. So some stress reducing activities that I like to add at night include going for a walk. You could do meditation. Mm-hmm. You could take an Epsom salt bath, you know, lit with candles around so you get that ambiance. You could read a book. You could also watch some comedy. Chris and I do like to watch comedy at night. Again, we got our blue light blocking glasses on, so, you know, we can still look at the screen and enjoy some comedy at night. And then also, you know, drinking some caffeine-free tea is another good option to really start to calm you down, take your mind off the day, and really prepare yourself for a good night of sleep and allow yourself to fall asleep faster. So, like, the worst thing is when you're in bed and you're like, I can't fall asleep. So really setting up this routine that also gets your brain thinking, oh, okay, so when I, like, for me, it's like, so when I read this book, I'm going to fall asleep. Kind of just set up that repetition every day.
Mm-hmm.
So currently my night routine, which actually involves Chris a lot, so we're going to have some overlap there, is usually every night we like to watch some sort of comedy, or, you know, if Chris is in the right mood, we'll play some games. I love playing card games. So if I want to get off the screen, then it's good if we play some games too. We'll usually drink some sort of calming tea, or we really like this reishi cocoa that we drink at night to, again, you know, help us wind down and still enjoy like a kind of sweet treat without eating a lot of food. And typically I will not eat late at night. So if I am a little hungrier, I'll typically have a small piece of dark chocolate, or I'll have a chocolate protein shake. That's one of my favorite night sweet treats without, you know, again, blowing my calories on a bunch of candy, or having ice cream every night. You know, obviously don't be afraid to treat yourself to some ice cream, but making that an ongoing habit wouldn't really add up to good results over time.
No.
And then typically after I do that, I will go into the bedroom and I actually leave my phone either outside of the bedroom or I plug it into an outlet that's I can't reach from the bed. So it's still in the bedroom, but I cannot reach it from the bed. So this really helps ensure that I'm not checking my phone, I'm not checking Instagram, I'm off the screen. And then at that point, that's when I read for at least 15 minutes every night, really, you know, give me some time off the screen. And I'm so used to reading a book and then falling asleep. And I've noticed, you know, that really has helped me instead of just scrolling through Instagram and falling asleep, because you can just stay on it. That's a time suck. That will, that does not put me to sleep.
No.
And that's pretty much it. It's, you know, nothing complicated. It's simple and stress relieving. And I get to spend some time with Chris. So I do love that part of my day too.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, mine's pretty much the same. It just, when she goes to bed, I'm usually up late. I usually listen to some type of podcast or lecture. It's usually a long form podcast. I don't want to listen to, you know, news or anything like that. That's going to get my blood boiling or anything like that. So it's usually something that's, very intellectual, kind of, profound and deep thought. And that way I can really kind of sink into it and not be distracted by other things. So it'd either be that or I'm reading. One of the two, but recently it's been podcasts, because it really just allows me to really relax and not have to focus on staying upright, reading, being in the light. Because like I can sit in the darkness and listen to a podcast, and right. I can't do that same thing with a book. Another thing that I like to do is kind of just sit down, and I've been journaling a lot more lately. Ever since we did our morning routine podcast, I've been more mindful about the nighttime journaling sessions. And it's not me like doing the normal journaling that we talked about, the morning routine journaling. It's more just getting my thoughts in order for the next day, maybe just going through my workout journal and what kind of, you know, based on how I feel that day, what I'm going to do the next day, and just certain things like that, just planning out the next day. Other than that, everything else I do is actually detrimental to my sleep. So it'd be things like when I know that I shouldn't get back up and eat. So say I most of the time I'll get in bed at like say 10:30, right? Maybe 11. And it's almost like clockwork. By like 11:30, I fall asleep, wake back up after like a half hour, hungry as hell. And I'll just beeline for the kitchen.
Oh my goodness.
And eat like crazy. So I'm just being honest with you guys, because I fail in that. Almost every night I wake up and go back into the kitchen and have like some protein or something. I try to keep it healthy.
Well, because that comes back to, you know, you should just make small improvements for you. Before, you were not sleeping. You were sleeping like, what, 5 hours? Mm-hmm. Now you sleep a lot longer. Now you are a little more conscious about what you're doing before you go to bed. So there's changes that you've made. But yes, I appreciate the honesty. He does get really hungry at night.
Yeah, it's just crazy. I mean, like, I really can't get rid of it. And so it's definitely something I need to fix. And that's one of the things that I've been working on, is trying to see what the problem is and why it is that I'm falling asleep and immediately waking up. I personally think it's probably because I'm spiking my insulin too close to bedtime. Mm-hmm. So I'm having a crash right after and it's waking me up. That's my suspicion. So I'm currently trying to fix that. But some nights are better than others, but I'm just trying to be honest and show you about some of the struggles, and that it's not always a constant steady uphill. There's roller coasters. You're going to have good nights. You're going to have bad nights.
I know. And sometimes I walk in the kitchen and I wonder if a raccoon broke into our kitchen, because there's like chocolate chips everywhere and like different.
Oh, when
nuts.
I'm in that, yeah, when I'm in that state, I don't put anything away. So it definitely looks like there's been a culprit in the kitchen.
I will say, because I do get this question a lot on Instagram, if you're a woman and you struggle with late night eating, a few things is, one, make sure you're eating enough throughout the day, getting enough protein, because if you're not eating enough throughout the day and then you binge at night, you know, I question, are you getting enough calories throughout the day? Are your calories too low? The other thing I do like is, if you're like, oh man, I just need something sweet at night, then that would be planning some healthy sweet treat every night. So a little bit of dark chocolate, a little bit of fruit, chocolate protein powder, some tea, looking into maybe some like healthier forms of cocoa that we like. So that is some suggestion in that realm. I know, Chris, you probably do eat enough throughout the day, so maybe it is the insulin thing. So we'll let you know as we dive into that a little bit more, and see as Chris continues to try to improve his sleep. And I'm not perfect either, but I guess I just happen to be a better sleeper. It does come a little bit easier to me, and I don't wake up hungry usually.
Yeah, I usually try to curb the sugar cravings, because that's usually what I'm waking up craving, is that I try to take about 10 grams of glutamine and just down the water. Mm-hmm. That's another thing too, is that a lot of times when I wake up, I'm just dehydrated and I don't recognize that it's a dehydration aspect. And so I go straight for food. Because you should know that the same hormone that regulates hunger also regulates thirst. So there's a lot of times that when you think you're hungry, you're actually thirsty. So what I've been trying to do recently is really down a full 20-ounce glass of water before I go to bed and make sure I'm hydrating myself and kind of preemptively satiating myself before I wake up craving.
Nice. Well, we'll continue down that journey. I hope you guys got a lot of value out of today's episode. There's so many different tips when it comes to it. Improving your bedroom, again, improving your habits at night to really set yourself up for sleep success and just make it a priority, but don't be too obsessive like I can be. And we'd love to hear, you know, what you're changing about your sleep routine after listening to this episode. Please share that with us.
Yeah, and let us know maybe if you have something that helps you get to sleep, a good habit that we didn't mention. We'd love to hear that and try to share it with our followers, because if something works for you, it could work for somebody else. And we'll have all this information and the studies and all that kind of stuff in the show notes. So be sure to check that out and send us a message. Let us know what you think.
Absolutely. Catch us on the next episode. Bye, guys.
Have a good one.